I'm Victoria Marshall with a special edition of the Washington Watch News Desk. For this episode, I sat down with Meg Kilgannon, a senior fellow for education studies at Family Research Council. We discussed Meg's area of expertise and her thoughts on the Biden administration's proposed changes to Title IX of the Civil Rights Act. Let's tune in. So first off, could you tell our viewers about your research area and the work you do for FRC?
I do work on education policy for Family Research Council, and I feel very blessed to work in an organization like this because they allow me to investigate things that I think are very important culturally, but a lot of times are overlooked in the grander educational policy sphere. The cultural issues, what is actually reaching students in the classroom, matters of curriculum and worldview and ideology that I know that Christians across the country care about. And most people send their children to public school. And so it's really important for us as Christians to be aware of what's happening in public schools, to be engaged with public schools. While we support school choice and we support Christian schooling and homeschooling especially, we still need to be very aware of what's going on in public schools because that is where most of the children of our country are being formed.
So could you tell our audience more about what the Biden administration rules are for Title IX and how they've changed from the Trump admin era?
Sure. I was working at the department when the Trump team released the Title IX rules that they rewrote. And those rules were attempting to correct the problems that had occurred in the Obama administration, in particular with the legal and quasi-court proceedings that Title IX offices can hold on college campuses especially. So a young woman could go to the Title IX officer and say that she'd been sexually assaulted, and the young man who was involved in that encounter would be put through a court-type proceeding that had no due process protections whatsoever. And he could have his scholarship removed, he could be expelled from school, he could face all kinds of repercussions based on an accusation that was not well documented and that he had no chance to defend himself against. So the DeVos administration was trying to redress that process, and they did a great job of issuing a set of rules and issuing a definition of sexual harassment for the first time that was really a wonderful advance in that area and was working to protect not only the students who had been assaulted, because there are sexual assaults on campus, to be sure, but protecting the rights of the accused as well, because it's so important. That's a bedrock foundational principle of our nation. That was one part of those rules. The Biden administration has gone on to redefine sex itself to include terms like sexual orientation, gender identity, sex stereotypes. So they have expanded the definition of sex, which we know to be male or female, to be so broad as to make it meaningless. And this undermines the rights of women in particular, but it also undermines the rights of men. The other thing the Biden administration is doing is they are forgiving student loans. They're canceling a lot of debt. And even canceling debt doesn't describe what they're doing, because it's not like the money isn't still owed. The question is, who's going to pay back the money that college students have taken out in the form of loans guaranteed by the government to go to college? And so this is going to be placed on the back of the American taxpayer, the people, many people who didn't go to college because they didn't want to take on debt, right? Or they couldn't afford to go, or they just weren't interested in going, are now going to be on the hook to pay back the loans of doctors, lawyers, you know, all kinds of advanced degree holders who will have their loans eventually paid for by the taxpayer.
Thank you for joining us today for this special edition of the Washington Watch News Desk. I'm Victoria Marshall. For more news and commentary, be sure to check out the Washington Stand at WashingtonStand.com and follow us on social media for updates at FRCDC. Up next is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. We'll see you next time with more news.
From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Hard to believe it's already September, but glad to have you for this special back-to-school edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. A lot coming your way today. We'll begin by discussing some of the issues and challenges facing our students, our schools, and frankly, our entire country in this new academic year. And at the college level, the question is, are we going to be in for a new round of anti-Israel protest? What about the pro-Hamas demonstrations? Are our higher institutions prepared after having the entire summer to plan for all of this? Those are some of the questions we'll be discussing when I'm joined here in just a few moments by North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox, who is the chairwoman of the House Committee on Education and Workforce. And when it comes to religious discrimination on college campuses, the federal government, quite frankly, should be vigorously defending religious liberties. But under the Biden-Harris administration, Christian colleges and Christian groups on other campuses have faced a web of government edicts that threaten the future and their education opportunities for literally thousands of students. I'll be talking about that with Michigan Congressman Tim Walberg a little bit later in the program. And you've heard us talk about this on Washington Watch on many occasions. Title IX, that's the law that Congress passed way back in 1972. The intent is to address sex discrimination and barriers that many women faced in education. Well, last month, as you probably know by now, the changes that the Biden administration made to this decades-old law came into effect. But there have been multiple legal challenges, and a number of states and school districts are now exempt from enforcing the Title IX changes as a result of legal action taken by state attorneys generals and groups like Moms for Liberty. So where do things stand right now, and what's up ahead? Well, I'll be joined by Tiffany Justice, one of the co-founders of Moms for Liberty, to discuss that a little bit later in the program. And then while there are certainly challenges, many challenges in our education system today, there are also some encouraging developments. One such development is the growing number of public schools that have welcomed an innovative Bible education program that is being offered by LifeWise Academy. And I'll be joined by LifeWise CEO Joel Penton to talk about what his organization is doing and what you can do to bring Bible education to public school students. And then at the end of the program, I'll be joined by Meg Kilgannon. She's the Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. And we'll be talking about some of the other things that parents and guardians should be aware of as this new school year gets underway. So we've got a lot coming your way, a packed show. And again, let me just remind you, if there are some issues that you are particularly concerned about, that you think our country needs to be aware of, that we need to be aware of, I want to encourage you to text the word education to 67742. That's a part of little action that you can take part of as we get underway. And don't forget our website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's jump into today's program with our Congresswoman Virginia Fox. Late last month, the heads of the Education and Workforce Committee, along with the Ways and Means Committee, they called on administrators at many top-level colleges and universities. They wanted them to provide a detailed plan on how they will prevent bigotry and intimidation against Jewish students, as well as pro-Hamas encampments that showed up nationwide. And that chairwoman of the Committee on Education Workforce, Virginia Fox, is here now to highlight this effort to hold elite colleges accountable for this anti-Semitism that we've all been watching. She represents the 5th Congressional District of North Carolina. Dr. Fox, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thank you so much, Jody. It's good to be with you. You know, one thing that I would say to you is I don't think we should call these institutions elite anymore. I think we should call them formerly elite or so-called elite, because you cannot be an institution of higher education and allow what is happening on these campuses to be happening. They should be protecting their students, and they should be showing support for students of all religions and not allowing anti-Semitism to run rampant. And as you mentioned in your opening, even anti-Christian efforts going on the campuses. So I would not call them elite anymore, because I don't think they deserve that title.
Well said. Well said. And I thank you for that comment. So as we enter into this, this is really the second academic year since we've all been watching the Hamas war with Israel. Are you anticipating that we're going to see again some of the things we saw last year as it relates to all the protests and the campus encampments? Do you think schools this year are going to be better prepared?
Well, that was what Jason Smith and I said to them. We need you to show concrete plans for what you are doing to make sure that all students, but particularly Jewish students, are being protected and that they are not being harassed. So we need to know that these students are going to be protected. But I expect to see much of the same on the campuses, because we don't believe that the schools have done what they need to do to be prepared. We know already there have been some demonstrations on some of the campuses, and we know that the groups that try to bring chaos have prepared for that, whereas we're not sure the schools are prepared. And we know there these pro-Hamas groups, anti-Semitic groups, are being funded heavily by perhaps other countries to give them the opportunity to go out there and do what they're doing and harm the students. Our goal in the committee has always been to make sure all students, but particularly Jewish students, feel safe and are not afraid to be on the campuses.
Yeah, and listen, we all deeply appreciate the work that you and the committee and others have been doing in this regard. I know one of the major epicenters, if we can use that term, of all the pro-Hamas student encampments and all that sort of stuff took place at Columbia University. Tell us, if you can, about some of the information that you uncovered showing Columbia University's failure to discipline the students who engaged in some of these extreme conduct, behaviors, and violations?
Well, we're extremely disappointed to hear that Columbia has done almost nothing to punish the bad behavior that occurred on the campus. Jody, you have children, I have children. We all know what happens when you allow bad behavior to occur with no consequences. And it appears to us that there have been almost no negative consequences to the bad behavior that occurred on the Columbia campus. Now, they hide behind privacy of students, but it appears to us, and we have nothing from Columbia to refute it so far, that very few of the students who were engaged in not just bad behavior, but unlawful behavior, that almost none of them have received any negative consequences for that bad behavior. And if that happens, then you'll get more bad behavior. We know that's true from human nature.
Absolutely. All that does is reinforce the bad behavior and encourage more of it. I just don't understand what these people don't get about, as you say, just basic human nature there. So as you are leading the charge on this, and your committee, you're leading the committee, what can, if anything, Congress do to tamp down some of the anti-Semitism on these college campuses as we enter into another academic year?
Well, shedding the light on this is the most important thing we think we can do. It has certainly made a difference, we believe, in the behavior on some campuses. Unfortunately, not all of the campuses. But our number one role has been to say, hey, look, this is wrong, what's happening. So we held our hearings, we publicized the information that we have gathered, and we're saying, this is unacceptable, and you need to do that. One of the things that's happening as a result, enrollment is down at most of these campuses, and we believe that's going to have an impact. The ultimate result could be the schools losing their ability to have Title IV money, which is financial aid provided by the American taxpayers, Jody. And you know from your work in Congress how much money we spend every year on loans and financial aid to the students and to their families. So that's the ultimate negative thing that could happen to them. Haven't gotten that far yet. We haven't gotten that far yet, but that's a potential. But again, what we have to do is count on public opinion putting pressure on these schools for them to do better.
Well, that's all encouraging news. If I can, we've got less than 2 minutes here, Congresswoman. Title IX, if I can switch gears on you, the rewrite went into effect last month, but the battle is continuing, and we're seeing a lot of victories across the country in this regard. How critical is this to you, and where do you see this going, the battle over Title IX?
You know, Jody, Title IX was a really, really wonderful thing to happen for women and girls. What it said is that women are to be treated equally, particularly as it related to sports. That opened up a whole new world for women and girls in terms of their ability to compete in sports, to use their God-given talents to compete, to get scholarships. And now what the Biden administration is doing is trying to destroy Title IX and all that it stood for. When Title IX passed in 1972, it was bipartisan. Democrats seem to know at that time that there is a biological difference between men and women. Right. We know that. We know that from studying the Bible. We understand that. But what we want is for women to be treated equally under the law. We're not trying undo biological differences. But thankfully, there are attorneys general who are filing lawsuits, other groups like Moms for Liberty.
Got to wrap it up there. Congresswoman Virginia Fox, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Moms for Liberty, Tiffany Justice will be joining me right after this break with this special edition, Back to School on Washington Watch. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you a Christian parent looking to raise a spiritual champion in today's culture? Renowned author George Barna has written a new book, Raising Spiritual Champions. This book offers valuable insights based on extensive research conducted by George Barna, the Family Research Council, and Arizona Christian University. Learn how to help your children discern biblical truth and find compelling meaning and purpose. Don't miss out on this essential resource for parents. Order your copy today.
Hello, I'm Jody Heiss, president of FRC Action. Here in America, we thank God for the right to vote, and we can all agree on the importance of this upcoming election. Many of us want to support candidates who share our values, but we're not comfortable supporting the big national political organizations. Well, we have a solution for supporting candidates through FRC Action's Faith, Family, and Freedom Fund. Being a super PAC, It allows for unlimited individual and corporate donations, so we can endorse and fund campaigns for people who share our values. By giving to this fund, we're able to pull all of our contributions together and support and endorse like-minded candidates. That's how we move the needle. So let's be the best stewards possible and get the most out of our political contributions by uniting our efforts. For more information or to contribute, visit faithfamilyfreedomfund.org. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone, because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to this back-to-school edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and so glad to have you joining us today. All right, court after court has lined up to tell the Biden administration that their radical rewrite of Title IX cannot be enforced. Thankfully, many states and many different groups have sued the Biden administration for depriving biological women and girls of the right afforded to them through Title IX by allowing biological men to invade female-only spaces. And joining me now is the president of one of those groups that sued, Tiffany Justice of Moms for Liberty. Tiffany, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me. It's such an important topic to talk about, especially with so many parents sending their kids off to school this week, next week.
Absolutely. Huge topic. So why don't we just start there? Since some people may not be, they know the issue, but they don't know Title IX, what is that? So remind our audience what Title IX is and what it protects.
Sure. So Title IX is a law that was passed by Congress over 50 years ago to protect women and girls and to make sure that women had equal opportunities in sports and education. So a great thing. And so many women and girls have succeeded, gotten scholarships. So many more women play sports now in high school and college. And so it was a wonderful law in our country to help women to advance. And now it seems now it's been rewritten. And the Biden administration has taken a radical stance in trying to redefine sex to include gender identity and sexual orientation. And so what that means for kids in school is boys on girls sports teams, boys and girls locker rooms, and bathrooms. And then, you know, real concerns about secrets being kept from parents, that children are expressing mental distress when it comes to their gender, and issues of compelled speech, where you send your child to school and they're going to have to call a boy a girl or a girl a boy, or maybe they have a teacher that's decided that they want to try to present as the opposite sex. So our mom said, no way are we going to force our kids to lie when they go to school, and so proud that we've taken a stand on this issue and had such success in the 10th Circuit.
We are so proud of each and every one of you. So real quick, 30 seconds, not an in-depth historical perspective, but how did Moms for Liberty get started? Was this the issue that these moms said, no more?
It's parental rights in general and the right to direct the upbringing of their children, their education, medical care. Every parent has the fundamental right to direct the upbringing of their children. And Moms for Liberty was born out of a lot of frustration from parents during COVID when we saw that the government thought that they know better than parents do for their children. And that's absolutely not true. Your parental rights do not stop at the classroom door. And that's what Moms for Liberty is doing now, working to protect our parental rights at every level of government.
And I remember that battle. I remember watching. My first response was, who are these ladies? And then everything that needed someone stepping in the gap to stand up for, there were Moms for Liberty. And I thank you. Hats off to every one of you. So tell us about what we've seen so far as a result of this specific pushback from your group and others who have stepped up against the Biden administration. How's it going?
Yeah, so that rule was released in April, was supposed to go into effect on August 1st, and we got a preliminary injunction in the 10th Circuit. We filed with Kansas, Alaska, Wyoming, and Utah, and Alliance Defending Freedom, Moms for Liberty, Young America's Foundation. But we weren't the only groups that stood up and took a stand here. Many other groups did. In fact, 24 different states now have preliminary injunctions against these new regulations being put into effect, which is wonderful. But Moms for Liberty's ruling out of the 10th Circuit was important. It was very special because what the court said was that any school that has a member of Moms for Liberty's kids in that school cannot enforce new Title IX regulations at that school. So for those parents that are in blue states where they didn't have an AG and a governor that's taken a strong stand on this issue, being a member of Moms for Liberty, which is completely free, has become a real saving grace.
That is remarkable. That is just an incredible ruling. So where does this all go from here? What's still ahead in this war? Are you seeing a momentum shift, or where are things looking as though they're going?
I think the DOE is very mad at us. Secretary Cardona is not happy that Moms for Liberty and a lot of other groups have been able to stop this rule in its tracks while we wait for trials on these different issues. But, you know, the DOE has appealed. They've appealed in the 10th Circuit. They've appealed in the other circuits. They actually went to the Supreme Court about the 5th and the 6th Circuit preliminary injunctions. And what the Supreme Court said was they were going to let those preliminary injunctions stand. So that's a good indication from the Supreme Court that they understand that this rule is unconstitutional. We're hopeful that if they do rule on it, that's what they will say. But what we've seen all of the judges in all of the other cases talk about is the fact that the DOE doesn't have the right to just rewrite this rule, that it's unconstitutional, that it's arbitrary and capricious. We had four declarants, moms, who said, we will not force our children to lie in school. I just want to give a shout out to the moms, if I could. They're amazing people who have been very brave, because the whole weight of the federal government is really pushing this idea of gender ideology all over the country. So as I said, we've seen all the circuit courts ruling in the right direction, saying this rule is unconstitutional. We'll see where these cases end up. And if there's a circuit split, I guess we'll end up in the Supreme Court. But I think all signs point to the fact that this rule will be struck down at some point.
I agree. And we're certainly hoping and praying to that end. Last question real quickly, and God forbid, but suppose Kamala Harris becomes president. Do you anticipate that she will continue the Biden's anti-woman Title IX crusade?
I absolutely do, which is kind of ironic considering the fact, you know, she's a woman running for president. It's just unbelievable, to be honest with you. But if you weren't sure where Kamala Harris stood on this issue, you can look no further than her VP pick, Tim Walz, who in the state of Minnesota passed three bills regarding transgender ideology in his state. He made his state a sanctuary state, so you do not have the right as a parent to stop your child to going through gender transition. He has made it a crime, so if you're not willing to affirm your child's wish of changing your gender, you can actually lose custody of your kids. So very, very dangerous. Harris-Walz ticket is honestly the most radical anti-parent ticket that we could have possibly had from the Democrats. And when people show you who they are, we believe them. So very concerned about that and excited about the fact that, you know, President Trump has been very clear about the fact he will not let this new rule, these new regulations stand. And so we're very hopeful that we'll put kids first.
Thank you so much, Tiffany Justice, Moms for Liberty, hero to every one of you. Pass that on. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. All right, friends, stay tuned. Coming up next on Washington Watch, Congressman Tim Walberg is going to expose how the Biden Department of Education is targeting Christian colleges. You heard that right. Stay tuned. We'll bring that story your way right after the break.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Good afternoon and welcome back to this special back-to-school edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. So glad to have you with us. As the new school year kicks into gear on college campuses nationwide, it seems as though our federal government has been sleeping through its own civics course. I mean, the Biden administration has been cracking down on free practice of our first freedom, targeting Christian colleges and Christian groups on various campuses. So how widespread is all of this and how serious is it? Well, joining me now to discuss is Congressman Tim Walberg. He's a member of the House Committee on Education and Workforce, as well as the Energy and Commerce Committee, which we always just call ENC. He serves and represents the 5th Congressional District of Michigan. Congressman Walberg, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you, my friend.
Jody, good to be with you.
All right, so let's begin. Why don't you just unpack how the Biden-Harris administration is seemingly weaponizing the Department of Education's institution eligibility criteria for federal aid for students. This is quite alarming.
It truly is, and that's why the Trump administration beforehand did away with some of these Title IX changes that were put in place during the Obama administration, and of course Hillary Clinton would have carried it even further. But since this new administration came in, they've been attempting to weaponize the Department of Education to really be a change agent group for all sorts of things, including beliefs and values that go down to the core of our religious underpinnings in this country. And so what we've seen under Title IX, especially, they've been moving backward to encourage, as they would say, colleges, universities, and that includes secular as well as religious institutions to come alongside in making sure that, for instance, people have freedom to change their genders, that no one can stand against that. Other ideologies on campus must be promoted as opposed to the traditional values. And so now it comes with the fact that the policy that they're attempting to put in place would say even for our religious institutions, if you're going to get any type of federal aid, Pell or you name it, you're going to have to submit to certain requirements that the Department of Education will make on you as well as all others, even if it goes against your longstanding religious First Amendment principles and rights that you have.
Let's camp out on that, because that really, that gets to the heart of it. How does all of this affect students who are attending or who are interested in attending Christian colleges?
Very much so. I have a background at Christian colleges such as Wheaton, Moody Bible Institute, Taylor University. All of those have longstanding religious principles, doctrinal beliefs that stand on the relationship of what gender is, that God created male and female, that marriage is between a man and a woman. And those are principles defined by scriptures that those institutions have long held and continue. In this case, you could see that if they were to get Pell grants for their students who are coming in, that the Department of Education could say, unless you change the principles there, you're not going to get the grant. They can also say to Christian organizations on university campuses that if you, for instance, one that we heard of with great notoriety, they were open to all faiths coming in and participating in their program, but they also had a mandate in their policy that we have Christians who are leadership, no one else. Well, the Department of Education said you can't do that, and the university came on and said you can't do that. You've got to let people of different faiths have an opportunity to lead your organization. That takes away all of the reason why the organization is there. So this is what the department is attempting to do now, and we're pushing back on it.
Well, thank you for pushing back. And you know, it's not just the student loans. And as you mentioned, there are people of other faith coming in with leadership positions, but there's heavy fines for these schools and all sorts of stuff. In our final moment or so that we have, tell us about your Protect Kids Act and why that is so important for parents.
Well, thank you for asking about that. I've introduced that in the House, and Senator Lankford and Tim Scott introduced in the Senate. It's our intent to make sure that schools are able to live up to their basic doctrinal, their religious values, and aren't pushed back by lack of funding. Also, the area of accreditation. They're attempting to get in there as well and say that you can't choose your accrediting source if that source doesn't go with what we believe. So ours says that can't be allowed. We must allow open and involved relationships with the longstanding religious principles of any school or institution, and the state or the U.S. Department of Education can't step in any way to negate that.
Wow. Common sense. I mean, that's just like basic liberties that we have in the United States. And Congressman Tim Walberg, I want to thank you for standing for our liberties and for leading the way in all of this. We are deeply appreciative, and the Protect Kids Act is a huge part of that. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thanks for highlighting it.
You bet. All right, friends, after the break, we're also going to be highlighting an innovative Bible education program that is spreading in public schools all across the country. In fact, it's spreading like wildfire. And we'll talk about some other issues, some other challenges, and as well as some resources that parents should be aware of. So much more coming your way on Washington Watch. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Join us October 3rd through the 6th as we gather with spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives from across America at the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit in Washington, D.C. We'll pray for our nation, engage in government and culture, and stand for biblical truth alongside Christian leaders, worldview experts, and government officials. We'll discuss important issues like the sanctity of life, religious freedom, protecting students, strengthening families, praying for our nation, and how you can impact America's future from a biblical worldview. Our nation stands at a critical juncture, and we must ensure that the issues impacting faith, family, and freedom are understood and advanced. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in him through his word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible. And join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. All right, just a reminder, the Pray Vote Stand Summit is going to be taking place October 3rd through the 6th in Washington, D.C. I'm sure you've heard about it now. We would love to have you come join us. This will be a memorable, memorable occasion. To find out more information and or to register, visit the website PrayVoteStand.org. PrayVoteStand.org. Go check that out. And I also, again, want to encourage you to make your voice heard with Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. I know you are, but I'll say it again. If you are concerned about the direction our nation is headed, you can be involved. Your voice can make a difference. To do so, simply text the word election to 67742, and you can participate in that survey. Again, that's election to 67742. All right, with the back-to-school season now in full swing, there are some public school students who are going to be receiving weekly Bible lessons during school hours. It's a program involving religious release time. Students in literally hundreds of locations in nearly half the states all across America this school year are involved with LifeWise Academy, which reaches tens of thousands of students with biblical teaching during the school day. And here to tell us how this coming school year is shaping up and to also highlight why religious release time might be something to consider for the public school students in your life. Joel Penton, the founder of and CEO of LifeWise Academy, now joins me. Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you again.
It's great to see you again, Jody. Thanks for having me again.
All right. Well, we are honored to have so. All right, let's talk about this religious release time. What can you share with us how it all works?
Yeah, well, few people realize is that in 1952, so over 70 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that public school students can, in fact, be released from public school during school hours to receive religious instruction if the program is off school property, privately funded, and they have students have parental permission. Sadly, this has been kind of under the radar, underutilized for the last 70 years. Just a few years ago, we developed a program, LifeWise Academy, that's kind of a plug-and-play program that we have all the resources, tools, templates, everything needed so that any community can implement the program and serve their local students.
Well, you know, it may be something that's kind of been hidden for decades, but really right now, this whole religious release time program is spreading, it seems to me, and thanks to you and the incredible work you guys are doing. How many locations? I mentioned that hundreds, but about how many locations are we looking at and how many students involved across the country?
Yeah, great question. Well, after just starting in 2019 with two schools, we are confirmed for this school year to serve 588 schools. And in fact, it's across now. We're up to 29 states. So we're confirmed from New York to California, from Alaska to Florida. And that number of 588, that's in fact changing by the day. It seems as though daily more and more schools are confirming and more and more students are going to be having Bible education during school hours. Last year, serving just over 300 schools, we had over 30,000 students enrolled. And so we anticipate well over 50,000 students enrolled nationwide.
That is just remarkable. 29 states, over 50,000 students. This thing is growing, growing, growing every year. And, you know, the impact of that, not only for these students right now, but in upcoming generations. I mean, this is going to have an enormous impact. Okay, Joel, for all those critics out there who say that this is a breach of the so-called wall of separation between church and state, what do you say?
Well, I would say a couple of things. Number one, that question has been settled. It's been settled by the highest court in all the land, the Supreme Court. I mean, a release time program went to the Supreme Court, and they recognized, no, this does honor the separation of church and state. And I would say that for those who are very enthusiastic about that principle, that they should, in fact, celebrate release time programs, because there's no greater manifestation of the principle. Students are literally physically separated from the public school, from the state school, to go to these programs. It is run separate from state dollars. It is separate from state compulsion. And so it certainly honors that principle. And that's why the Supreme Court ruled the way they did.
And there's no forcing of students to participate. How does a student get involved?
Well, their parent signs a permission slip, and so they'll do that through our website. All of our local programs have a webpage on our site, and so they find their way on there, and they sign up their child, and then their child can go. If they ever want to remove their child, they just can remove them. As you said, it's entirely optional, and so you can see why so many parents are so excited about this, that their children will have access to this. It's harder to understand how anybody could be, enthusiastically opposed, considering it's optional.
Yeah, absolutely. So for people right now watching or listening to this conversation who may be interested to support what you do, they want to bring a LifeWise chapter to their local school. How difficult is that to accomplish? What are the general steps that they need to go through to bring a LifeWise chapter to their school?
Well, I will say, and I thank you for the question, that it is a process, because you are setting up a program. But what's exciting is that anybody can get it started. Anybody can participate in the process. And you do that through our website. You go to lifewise.org and you can look up any school district in the nation and you can find out where your school district stands. Out of the 13,000 school districts nationwide, we have heard from individuals in nearly 5,000 school districts. And the process starts with simply a signature campaign. And so you find the district on our website, you add your signature to the list, you share it with friends. Once we have 50 signatures in your community, then we can go through the process of forming a steering committee, of developing a plan, and all the way to the point of students receiving Bible education.
Do you find a lot of opposition with school boards or local school administrators?
I would say among administrators, among school boards, we see very little. Most of them recognize that this is an incredibly positive impact. I mean, decades of studies show that kids who have Bible education in their life simply do better in every way imaginable. And so the educators really like it. There are individuals in communities and individuals online that simply don't want kids to have access to the Bible. And there are certain parents that don't want other parents to be able to sign their kids up for this optional program, which is unfortunate, but also not necessarily surprising.
Not surprising at all. All right. One more time, Joel, before I let you go, where can interested parents, grandparents, whomever go to learn more about LifeWise?
Yes, thank you. Head to lifewise.org. That's LifeWise.org. And make sure, and you can watch videos, you can learn a lot, but before you leave, click find your school and find your local school district and add your name to the list.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much, Joel Penton, founder and CEO of LifeWise Academy. Fantastic work you're doing. Keep it up. And thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. It's an honor.
All right. Here now to wrap up this back-to-school edition of Washington Watch is Meg Kilgannon. She's the Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. And, of course, she previously served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. Meg, always an honor to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's really great to be here, Jody.
All right. Well, what an incredible program today, talking about stuff right down your alley. And we've talked about a lot of different things. What are some of the issues that are heavy on your heart and on your mind as we go into this school year?
I just want to my hope and prayer for this upcoming school year is that parents will understand, honor their role as the primary educators of their children. And even though we may outsource that, as Tony says, we may outsource that to other people, it's still really our job. And of course, the most important thing we need to educate our children about is God and His love for them and His love for everyone and His wonderful guidelines that He has given us about how to live a life that is fruitful and meaningful and truly joyful. So that's my biggest
Absolutely.
Hope.
You know, and those are all things that ought to be passed from one generation to the other joyfully and with great anticipation. But we all know we're living in a period of time now where it seems like everything is to undermine the well-being of students and families, and it seems like all the wrong teaching and worldviews are being crammed down their throats. So what advice could you offer, say, to parents right now, grandparents? They want to stay engaged in their kids' life at school. What do they do? What's the best way to do that?
Well, we've come to a point in history where it seems like the family dinner is a revolutionary act. The more you engage with your kids and talk to them about their school day, the better. And having dinner at night together as a family and just recapping everybody's day is so wonderful. And so everybody should be doing that at a minimum. Parents need to have their children's passwords to their computers for school that are most school districts now are issuing devices to students, and those devices come with passwords. A lot of times the school will issue the parents a password, and the children will have a different password. So I'm encouraging parents to understand what their children's passwords are and to regularly monitor those computers and those devices that your children are using. Check the books that they're bringing home in the library. Go to back-to-school night. Look at the resources in the classroom that the teacher has for your students. Check out those book titles. Pick them up. Glance through them, especially the graphic novels, to see what kind of pictures are there. You know, you really just have to do your due diligence. You cannot take for granted that your school is safe, and you know, you also shouldn't necessarily think it's terrible, right? But we need to do our part to ensure our children's safety, because ultimately it's our responsibility God has given these children to us as parents, and we must do our best to protect them.
And if they find something in a book that is alarming, that is inappropriate, what action should they take at that point? Who should they call? Who should they contact? What do they do?
Yeah, I would, of course, you know, the Bible guides us on this to take it up with the person directly first and then to take it to higher and higher levels, right? So take it to the teacher first if you don't get what you want there, take it to the principal, and so on and so on. Hopefully, you'll get an immediate course correction at the most basic level, right? But if that doesn't happen, you may need to take it higher. And you shouldn't be shy about doing that, because there, even if they don't say anything, there are other parents who have these same concerns, and you're speaking out on their behalf, too, and certainly
Absolutely.
On behalf of the children.
And that's great advice, Meg. And keep going. Once you get past the principal, you take it to the school board. If
Yes.
you don't get anything from the school board, you just keep you keep making a ruckus, because wrong is wrong, period, and it needs to be made right. And speaking of that and thinking within that context, of course, elections are coming up, and in many of these elections will be local school board races. And that may be on the minds of many of our viewers, listeners right now. What would you say to those who may be feeling a nudge, maybe, to get engaged in that way?
Well, you absolutely should pray about it and consider running for school board. If you're interested in running for school board, we have resources at frcaction.org/schools. But even if you're not considering running, there might be school board candidates on your ballot when you go to cast your ballot for president or senator or Congress this year, because all of those races are possible for your ballot. There may also be school board races and, Board of Supervisors races and county government officials and the sheriff and all of the people who directly affect your life are going to be on the ballot in one form or another. So you need to do your due diligence and make sure you're fully prepared to cast that ballot well.
Meg, I'll just share this real quickly. I remember when I was running for Congress, I was visiting one day in a small rural community in Georgia. And I was speaking. When I finished speaking, they asked if anyone else was running for any position. And a gentleman came up, and he did a phenomenal job. In fact, he got a standing ovation. He ended up being a pastor of a little local church, and he was running for a school board. He said, "I'm running for this district over here." After him, someone else came up. Brilliant speech. Everybody started cheering for him. He said, "I'm also running for school board in this district over here. And by the way, I go to this guy's church." And then the third person came up, did the same thing. Everybody started cheering. He said, "I also go to this guy's church." Same little church, ran for three different districts for the school board. And they turned that whole school board around. It does not take much to get engaged and to make a huge difference. You mentioned some of the school board resources we have. Real quickly, what are some of the other resources available for education resources at FRC and FRC Action?
Sure. We have the school board resources at frcaction.org/schools. We also have just general education resources. We have a guide to engaging with the public school system. We have a paper about the Southern Poverty Law Center and their radical Learning for Justice program that's so common in schools today. There are lots of resources at frcaction.org, and I'd encourage our audience to go there for more resources.
Thank you so much, Meg Kilgannon. Always great to have you, Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. We're looking forward to a great year. We're looking forward to a school year that's going to have a lot of great impact. Thank you so much for joining us, Meg. All right, friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. We are so grateful to have you on board with us. Hope you have a fantastic remainder of your evening. We'll see you next time right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.